Hi, welcome to another Coffee Time Chat. Today we look at the hotel staffing issue and ask, is this just a passing shower or a bigger storm brewing? To help us along with this conversation, we're joined by Bill Scanlon and Kirby Smith from Strategic Solution Partners. Through their Hotel Task Force solution and project-based expert consulting, SSP work day in, day out, hand in glove with medium and small hotel groups and independent properties. So we felt they're well placed to provide insights on the current situation regarding staffing challenges, the loss of senior strategic expertise following COVID, and what their recent gig study showed about the attractiveness of the hotel industry and the potential misalignment between what hotels are offering and what future talent is looking for. And surprise, surprise, it's not all about more money. Really hope you enjoy the conversation. Let's get started.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Kirby. Thanks for joining us today. Bill, you well? Looking good over
there? Doing great, Trevor. Doing great. Great to talk to you again. Good to
see
you.
And likewise. And Kirby, thanks for joining us. First time for you. How are you? You well?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Trevor.
Brilliant. Well, Bill, you've been on a couple of these conversations. Kirby, you haven't. So what I'll probably do is just get you both, Bill, a bit of a refresher, then Kirby, if you can just give us a bit of an intro into who you are, that'll help set the scene. And then I'll tell our audience what we're actually going to talk about. So, Bill, just very briefly over to you for a moment, then, if you wouldn't mind.
I don't know, Trevor, when you're in the business this long, it's hard to be brief, right? So... Bill Scanlon, I'm the chairman, president of Strategic Solution Partners, a company I founded about 15 years ago with a long tenured branded and independent operations experience, sales and marketing in the industry.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
And then we have Kirby joining us today. Kirby joined our company, I guess, a little bit less than a year ago, and specifically to come in and lead our industry expert and consulting practice. He's got a great background and he'll expand on that, but we're very excited to have Kirby with us.
And we're glad to have Kirby joining us today as well. So Kirby, over to you, please.
Hey, thanks, Trevor. Thanks, Bill. So I am excited about being the Director of National Accounts Consulting for Bill's and Company, for SSP. It's been a learning experience, a lot of upside getting to know, you'll probably hear me brag on them a little bit, our cadre of industry experts. So part of my role is to make sure that they've been vetted and that they have high value. So when we reach out to our customers that it's a win for both parties. Spent a lot of time working with the cadre of industry experts and how it matches up with the businesses that need it. Love it. Bill said I got a long background in the hospitality industry, the bulk of that with Marriott International. I'm proud to say worked for a small regional company and work with a lot of franchise partner companies that give me a lot of breadth of experience too that I leverage in this new capacity that Bill's brought me on for. So I'm excited.
Brilliant. So I wanted to ask you guys, and this is why we wanted to get you on, to ask the question, is there, or does a pre-COVID mentality still exist in this post-COVID world? And what I wanted to tap into specifically there is, we read a lot, we hear a lot about hotels saying about how there is this need to change. But hotels can also be guilty of talking the talk and not walking the walk.
Trevor, I'll take that. And, you know, I work with a lot of different hotel companies when I worked for Marriott and post Marriott. Got a lot of exposure. And it's what you just said. It's a mix. Mm-hmm. And there are some that have adjusted very well, but we're inclined already to have taken the hotel associates' well-being in mind. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's a mixed bag where some have made some changes. There are still a lot of folks that are, in my opinion, way behind the curve. It's business as usual. We'll get through this. You know, with revenue being what it is, with average daily rate really being what it is, it's kind of another hedge. So it's like, we're gonna be okay because right. The bottom line's looking pretty good. Mm-hmm. And they haven't adjusted to the, I would call, the younger demographic. And what I mean by that is when you're hiring somebody at a younger set across most disciplines, is social responsibility matters, community matters, being listened to matters. The other big piece is technology. Mm-hmm. That it's still in our industry, it's been a challenge, but a lot of folks have not moved towards technology. So it's hard to attract people because it's a non-starter for the younger demographic.
Yep.
And then our experience now, including what we do now at SSP, is the lack of use of technology and to streamline the system and make it more efficient. And that frustrates a certain level of associate at all levels. And so I don't need this. This doesn't have to be this way.
Bill, just a general comment to my broad question.
COVID itself is, we're over it. You know, I think everybody's over it. I can't speak internationally, but domestically US, it really appears that for the most part, people are done. You know, we have the short-term memory, you know, it's not in the news anymore. It's not the latest, greatest story. So it's everybody's kind of moved on. I think there's a lot of things happening right now, and Kirby hit a lot of them, but, you know, I think a recession is something that is talked about and continues to change week to week, day to day, depending on what expert you talk to. But the hotel industry itself is not necessarily seeing it. Mm-hmm. And I think Kirby hit on the point that demand, you know, and that rate premium that they've been able to get has kind of allowed them to extend their operating models mm-hmm. without necessarily having to worry about it because they're making money.
Right.
They're getting their money back. They're paying off their debt service, everything else. So they know they need to change, but, you know, they're coming out of COVID. They're making money. Things are working well. Everybody's having to work harder. But in general terms, well, why change? Because I'm making money with less people. So they're not being forced to necessarily make the changes that they need to make. So even though COVID's done, you know, we're still having to deal with the labor shortage that was there pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. It was just accelerated. And you've got this cross-generational work ethic.
Yeah.
You know, an approach, you know, everybody's focused on the young folks. They're not the ones that are necessarily working in the hotels. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got millennials, you've got X, you got Y, you got boomers, you know, you've got all these people with different profiles that are working in these hotels, you know, and how do you as an employer, you know, take each one of them and try to be specific to each one and attract each one.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be this balance between hiring for the immediate need and hiring for the long-term need and the availability of talent in both scenarios.
Kind of putting you on a spot a little bit here, but are there any particular practices that you are seeing? And we're not in here to name particular hotels or groups or call anybody out. But before we look at what are some of the positives that you guys are experiencing, maybe we could just look at more generally, when you say things need to change, what are some of the legacy practices that are maybe creating a slightly negative outcome or a mediocre outcome that maybe people should be thinking about addressing sooner rather than later, irrespective of what your ADR might be or your occupancy might be? Who wants to pick up on any of that?
I'll go ahead. I think part of it's what we mentioned. It's understanding your audience. Mm-hmm. It's not business as usual. And I like Bill's comment, you know, so whether it's a younger demographic or older, things are different. Mm-hmm. And the associate or the employee has some leverage now and they know it.
Yeah.
And so when they watch people just listen more, try to be creative there. I haven't seen the silver bullet yet, as I said, but some of it is just, it's the 4-day work week. It's an incentive to work remote for those positions that can one day a week. Mm-hmm. It's recognition and appreciation for what they do. It's kind of a cultural change that when somebody wants to go watch their daughter play soccer, mm-hmm. that you're more open to it. You just understand the associate's day-to-day life. You know, one of the big ones too out there in our industry is staffing of mm-hmm. operational folks in particular. And that's a challenge. It's 24/7. But it's sort of like you don't know your schedule 2 weeks out. And you work harder to say you can take that long weekend because your four friends are going out and you don't want to be left out. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of small wins that recognize they're trying. I got to go on this great trip. I wasn't left behind because of the industry I work in. It's those small little wins. And I'm still going to keep mentioning technology. It's it's these companies that are more rallying around making their life better at all demographics. Is a big deal too, and the industry's behind, as you well know.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And Bill, anything that you're seeing out there that you would headline in addition to what Kirby said, or
it's kind of simple for me. You know, it's the ability to adapt and change as quickly as the market's changing. Mm-hmm. And traditionally, hospitality has never been the most progressive. you know, like Kirby said, in their technology or in our practices or whatever, it's if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, things are changing very quickly. And a lot of companies that are big companies, you know, like a Marriott or a Hilton or a Hyatt, you know, they've got their legacy practices and, you know, trying to turn that organization on a dime and turn that on a dime, you know, every 3 months is very difficult to do. Mm-hmm. And then when you think about the fact that the engagement of a Hilton or a Hyatt or a Marriott, you know, pre-COVID was you had a lot of resources for franchisees. Mm-hmm. You know, they're migrating their model away from management towards franchise. During COVID, all those resources were pulled away all at one time.
Right.
So everybody was struggling with how am I going to operate my hotel right now? And didn't have the resources that Marriott would typically be able to afford, mm-hmm. their franchisees. Mm-hmm. Now they're coming out of it. And that national account support isn't necessarily there. That marketing support is not necessarily there. That franchise operation support is not necessarily there. So now all the franchisees are having to retool their organizations, yeah. because all the things that they relied on pre-COVID are no longer there post-COVID from the brands.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So I just want to pick up on something that you've both been kind of talking about there. When you've both mentioned some of the larger, you know, you've used specific names, but referring to the larger brands and how they reacted. And I think at times, and again, do correct me if I'm wrong, you guys are the experts here, but often the smaller groups, medium-sized group, independent properties, you know, there's pros and cons of being a part of a large brand. And would it be fair or accurate to say that this is maybe a good opportunity because the large brands have their legacy operations, because as you said, Bill, it can take a while to have to change those things around.
Yeah, Trevor, I'll take that if I could. I think generally speaking, the smaller hotel management companies, they are challenged just staffing, period. Mm-hmm. You know, because they're not aware of, you know, Bill mentioned some big brands. You know, you go to those, there's some huge franchise management companies that have great reputations, great yeah. earned reputations. You start to drop down, you're not a known entity. Or in some cases, being real frank with you, there is somebody managing those companies that is more into commercial real estate in general, and now they have four hotels they need to operate.
Right.
And we work with a lot of these folks, mm-hmm. and they are short-staffed. They miss what Bill and I would look at as just low hanging fruit. It's just the basic. If you're going to run an operation, you need these components, so on and so forth. So I agree with you. When they identify issues, they can be really nimble, very quick versus move the proverbial aircraft carrier. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them, particularly during these times, are short staffed and on that proverbial hamster wheel. Even if they know what needs to be done, it's a real struggle to get it done.
Right.
And I see that as a real challenge that's very consistent on the smaller companies attracting and retaining talent.
But you know, the biggest thing is, you know, is your culture based in entrepreneurial and change, mm-hmm. you know, change management. You know, if it's not, you know, again, there's not a lot of businesses that are. You can go across every industry. You know, we talk about hospitality as being, you know, the focus of these discussions, but you know, there was just an article out the other day about how the government is forcing, you know, everybody back into the office, you know, for three yeah. days a week. You know, there's a lot of empty real estate. You know, corporations are trying to get people back into the offices because, you know, the banks aren't going to let them just, you know, fold on that real estate. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of dynamics going on right now that everybody's trying to adjust to. So in fairness, you know, it's really, okay, how do I change this quickly? And how do I understand what I need and get what I need that quickly and being able to change again 3 and 6 months from now? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's really kind of a change of mentality. You know, it's a change of saying, okay, I can't do this by myself. Everything else was always invented in-house.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, okay, how do I look outside? You know, and how do I bring in somebody from outside who can temporarily bridge the expertise and the knowledge I need from point A to point B? And then, oh, great. From going from point B to point C is a different set of skills.
Yeah.
So how do I find somebody else to do that in order to get me from A to B to C to D?
Yeah.
Over a 2 year period instead of over a 10 year period.
Yeah. But that comes back to what you said about having a change mentality though, doesn't it? I guess that's the first stepping point. It's about recognizing we're in a place of change. The world is continually in flux, but seems to be in flux greater than it's ever been before. And so you either sit there and watch it going on around you and wonder when it will stop, or you recognize that this is going to continue and I probably need to start embracing and thinking, how does that actually impact on my business?
I think the big thing is that people realize they can't solve their needs in-house. Mm-hmm. They simply don't have the number of personnel that they need, and they don't have the talent level what they need. Mm-hmm. And so more looking for bringing in an industry expert, a consultant that has great experience, can look at things from a strategic macro environment, productivity, efficiency. I like to brag on CFOs, because mm-hmm. the ones I've enjoyed working with are just typically the consummate CFO gets the whole big picture.
Yeah,
got to have the top line, bottom line, organizational capacity, and all that kind of stuff. And when somebody can go in, whether they're in food and beverage or finance or ops, it doesn't matter. They see that macro level, that the interconnectivity that is the 24/7 operation, and streamline things for them in a way that enhances the overall business operation. It's a big win. It's like Bill said, it's like these types of entities that I'm referring to, they just don't have a lot of resources. And when times are real good and staffing's okay, it works. It works really good. But when the wheels start to come off a little bit, it's hard to get back on the track. It really is. And great examples in food and beverage too, where you just have somebody that just sees the big picture operation on time wasters, mm-hmm. or putting product on the menu that are too expensive, they don't move. I mean, they're really, really slick at moving, moving a business forward.
And I mean, some of the things don't have to be, don't necessarily require massive investment and massive change. Sometimes it's just not having the expertise in there to be able to look at the operation and say, okay, well, if you make a few of these adjustments, as you said, you can have quite a significant impact on the operation without it having to get too crazy and too strategic. There has to be a strategic direction, but sometimes the problems just need someone with the expertise to be able to look at it, doesn't it?
Well, my experience is you are spot on with that. The caveat to that, though, is that somebody is the leader or the owner of mm-hmm. those changes. Mm-hmm. And so what we try to do is, if we go in and we write the ship for somebody, it's to come back and just be that objective, kind of tough. Mm-hmm. We are moving in this direction. It seems like it's faltering. We all agreed this was the right thing to do to keep moving it forward, to have that. It doesn't have to be a third party. It does not. It's fine if it is, but somebody within the organization has to say, we said we're going to do this and we're going to keep the momentum and sustain it. Because too often in life, you see that in business. We start something, get sidetracked, the customer's out there, needs to be heard, and we stop the focus. And then you did great work for 6 months, but not for the next, years and years.
We've been talking for sort of 15 minutes or so now. Consistently, staff, people, resource being an individual has come up. So here we have hotels that have a staffing issue. And here we have a set of people that are going to be looking to coming into the industry, or we're competing against to try and entice them to come into the hotel industry and join us as a career. Now, your study kind of posed the question to me that how closely aligned are the two messages, i.e. what we're offering to this is what I'm looking for. Can you just talk us through what the study indicated and showed?
I guess they're not necessarily misaligned. You want to be as balanced as you can in your perspective and understand the dynamics that's happening in everybody's world. And they're on paper, they're not aligned. Mm-hmm. So you ask yourself, why are they not aligned? Mm-hmm. Well, they're under-resourced, they're underfunded, they're under, they're underscoped. It's not comparing apples to apples, and it's not always fair, but it is what it is. Generally they're misaligned. Mm-hmm. Certainly. We all know that, but we're focusing more on the kids coming out of college, the younger generations, not necessarily, the later generations and the boomers that are still out there still working, with a different type of work ethic. So, you know, they're struggling with a lot of dynamics at one point in one time period. So our industry provides any potential employee or anybody that's interested in it, the opportunity to work in an environment that they choose. Mm-hmm. You know, not too many people can offer that.
No.
The problem is that our industry as a whole hasn't done a good job of projecting that type of image, you know, again, from that, you know, standard practice of adhering to the dogma of how we typically have acted instead of individually, let's get collectively together and say, hey, you know, whether you're Hyatt, you're Marriott, you're an independent, you're a luxury boutique, there's some great places to work. There's the gig study bears out that discrepancy, but it also bears out the opportunity.
Did it show? I mean, one of the things that you added into the last gig study was you actually spoke to academia as well and spoke to those that are involved in educating the next hoteliers that are going to be coming into. And I guess the question I always ask, and to your point about the industry as a whole making itself or re-communicating the value of the industry as a career, are we still seeing that being embraced at an age? Are we seeing people choosing? What was some of the feedback that you were getting? Are people just seeing hotels as it's a box of rooms and they pay me a rate and I got to work hard, maybe harder than going to a Walmart or whatever it might be for a few more bucks? Or were they seeing people actually understanding and embracing that there are those careers and those opportunities?
You know, again, what it bore out is the fact that we've got a bigger problem than we think we have. Mm-hmm. Because when you go back to the traditional schools, and again, the research that we did, you know, went anywhere from UNLV to, you know, UNC Rosen, mm-hmm. or UCF Rosen, you know, which is a big school, but again, it's not considered what you would, you know, a UNLV top tier hospitality school. And in general terms, you know, enrollment's down for hospitality programming. They're merging hospitality programming with the business school programming. Mm-hmm. So now you've got competition outside of the hospitality program with the business school, yeah, in order to look at different types of careers and different career paths. So if you've got less kids going to college, less kids choosing hospitality, less kids graduating out into that industry, less recruiting going on, you know, by the people involved, you know, you've got a recipe for a long-term problem,
yeah,
that will just continue to exacerbate. So what the gig study also bore out was the fact you've got to look for alternative sourcing. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't rely upon the traditional colleges to provide everything that you need.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of dynamics going on right now that, you know, the industry as a whole really needs to kind of get its arms around and not try to solve world hunger, you know, but just try to understand that the traditional ways of recruiting and securing potential college graduates has got to change, and it's got to become like UNC Rosen's offering certificates. Mm-hmm. So instead of a four-year degree, you can get a certificate in 6 months to a year, depending on what it is you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Traditionally, the employers like to have the college degree,
yeah,
versus the certificate.
Yeah.
It's all relative to what... But their adaption.
That comes back to changing again, doesn't it? And doing, we've always done things one way. Maybe we have to just reassess how we do that. Kirby, have you got any points to add into that as well? I mean, not necessarily specifically talking about the gig study, although you can, but maybe how that correlates with what you're seeing possibly.
Well, you know, we're talking about forward thinking earlier, and I call it the train coming, the way Bill described it. You know, obviously we've all seen the gig study, and we have a bigger problem people realize. So you have a lot of folks that are making money right now, but it's a challenge, just current staffing. And I'm talking at high levels now too, with being able to know what's coming, what sources do you have to fill the slots that you need so you continue to be a successful business? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a real challenge for some folks because they're just taking care of their 24/7 business.
Yeah.
I think the other bigger piece too is, or important piece is, the industry has been segmented for so long. We generally compete versus work together on a lot of different issues. Mm-hmm. And it's work. But if you look at some of the other industries, you know, even the automotive or the pharma, you know, there's a lot of good work being done in the hotel industry by some great organizations that pull us together. but there still isn't that common message that Bill refers to about the industry being a good place to work. So it's great if we do a couple things well, you know, to more than just tweak the work environment, that it is a good work environment. I think there's upward pressure on wages. It's putting pressure on margins, but there's been some upward movement on that. And fix the technology issue, because that's a non-starter for a lot of folks. I think we'd be in a better spot. But I think generally speaking, I haven't seen it really take hold yet that people understand just how big the issue is coming forth, the current state anyway.
Yeah, and I think that's what I wanted to get you guys on, and we wanted to just touch on some of this. I mean, yeah, we could talk for hours, deep dive into a lot of it, but I think the general message when we were first discussing what should we talk about was that this just feels like it is a bigger problem than just a post-COVID issue or a cost of living potential recession issue. This feels like something that has been building and building and building for a number of years, and almost to you, taking us right back to one of the comments you said at the very beginning, Bill, which was, well, why change?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, one of the biggest things is the attention to macro data. Mm-hmm. You know, and what I mean by macro data is data outside of the industry. Mm. You know, when you look at the demographics, the psychographics, these kids, you know, they're being labeled as, you know, non-workers,
right?
Yeah. You know, high tech, low touch gamers.
Yeah,
that's not necessarily true.
So unfair.
You know, they have an unbelievable social network. Do they socialize as much as, you know, go outside and play, kid? No, they don't. They don't go outside and play the same way we did, but that's okay. But they do have their friends. They do have their social network. They do have their communication methodologies that are different. So relationships are important. How they're treated is important. People are people. You know, so understanding not necessarily what motivates a generation, but what motivates an individual is important, because there are a lot of individuals out there that do want to do what we do, that would enjoy doing what we do, that would enjoy meeting, you know, and being part of some of these experiences with entertainers and celebrities and things along those lines, or, you know, exotic destinations or the travel. It's not for everybody, but we've got something for everybody. You know, so it's a matter of telling that story, and it's a matter of embracing who it is that you're talking to, and it's a matter of thinking out of the box. You know, when I think about, I started the company, 14 years ago? Mm-hmm. And 10 years ago, we were in thousands relative to sales.
Yeah.
Now we're doing much, much better than that. Mm-hmm. So that alone tells you that this business model, there is a need for it, and that need is growing exponentially year over year.
And how have you adapted? I mean, how's SSP had to adapt, I guess, to reflect the changes with the industry, or to recognize those changes and get ahead of it?
But Kirby's a great example of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a year ago, he wasn't here.
Yeah.
You know, and we brought in his expertise in order to complement the task force side with the macro consulting side, so that if a customer comes to us with a problem, you know, we're able to solve it with not only the macro look and the expertise at that level, but if it needs to be pulled through, you know, how many times have we seen consultants come in, you know, company spends $4 million on it and nothing happens.
Yeah.
Well, that's because it's left to the organization to make the change. You know, Kirby's industry experts can go in and say, you know, finance wise, here's what you need to do. Here's what your SOPs need to look like, whatever the case might be. And oh, by the way, we're going to be able to complement that by having a support director of finance stay in place. Mm-hmm. In order to pull those findings through.
Yeah.
So it's a one-stop shop, you know, and again, trying to educate the customer, you know, our customer, in the fact that, you know, Kirby's here, his team's got that expertise. It's complemented by, you know, that pull through at the rank and file level from a management perspective. So we're a one-stop shop. You know, which traditionally has not been out there. So, you know, it's trying to evolve the business model faster than the market's ready for. Mm-hmm. In order to make sure when they're ready, we're here to help them.
And Kirby, as you've been kind of headlined through this as the one of the biggest latest additions to add to the SSP offering, do you want to have that one of the last words on that, and where where you sit and your responsibility and your teams?
Well, it's exciting. And, you know, as Bill was talking, he was talking reality and the way it works. And you know, I had mentioned earlier about sustainability, that if a industry expert goes in and can identify, you know, efficiencies and productivity gains just at a macro, more strategic level, you need to have a leader on property that's either going to push it or have us come back and visit like we do to make sure you're still on track. Mm-hmm. But if speaking on track, if you're off the track and just a lack of staffing, the way it does work is I do need that director of finance. Yeah. I do need that director of food and beverage in the short term. So we get some momentum. We like to focus on momentum. So if you get somebody believing, if here's the strategy, then you start to get some traction at the line level where it really happens, where it really it has to happen at that line level. And people buy in and they see, wow, we were on the hamster wheel. We're not. Yeah. And so that's good for the business because it makes more money typically or more profit, but it's good for attraction and retention too, though. It all comes together. That becomes that good place to work. You know, I think the biggest thing about that is it drives preferred employer. And again, I have some real life examples that the franchise companies and major management companies, they get it. Yeah. There is a way to solve it, but I don't think there's enough people that know how to solve it out there yet. They just don't see what's coming and have the bandwidth or the forward thinking to be able to get out ahead of this on what's coming their way. But there is a method, and we just talked about some of them. The other thing is the younger demographic, it's over stereotyped or profiled. And I think once you do that, you're being a knucklehead. And there are a lot of folks at the younger demographic that absolutely like our business, love our business, that can make our business better using technology and just the way they work, tie in the community is a very natural thing for them. Well, that's good for business. Mm. So for those that push them away because some within that demographic can be a challenge, and I get it, that's real. There are many that they process information quicker, they're creative. They are very talented people, and yeah, they're out there. Our industry needs to get more of them.
Couldn't agree more. I think on that note, that's probably a good point to end it. Thanks both of you for joining. It's been great to have the conversation with you, and we'll get you on again in the future for sure. Absolutely.
Thanks, Trevor. You have a great day.
Pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Take care. Well, I hope that conversation was of interest, and thanks again to Bill and Kirby for joining us. If you have any thoughts or views on this discussion, please feel free to reach out. You can reach us via our social channels, or you can email us via insights@revenue-hub.com. And if you like what we're producing, please do subscribe through the podcast channel you're listening to. And if you want to see the interview, you can find it on the Revenue Hub YouTube channel, and the link is in the podcast notes. Anyway, until next time, thanks for listening.